Well, usually I just say it's time, so I'm going to say it's time. Arthur Schwartz, the food mensch. It's time. Hi, Arthur Schwartz, the food mensch. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am well. Thank you so much. What are you mentioning about?
Well, I got a very interesting letter from Frances. I think you pronounce
Franny.
Her last name. Right. She calls herself Franny Budniak or Buddyneck. In any case, Franny is living in Ohio, although she is previously of New York, she points out, and Brooklyn, actually. So anyway, I don't know why she moved to Ohio. Anyway, she asked me about blanching vegetables. Now, let me say for Franny, blanching, as it applies to vegetables, is spelled without the E at the end. B-L-A-N-C-H. And, you know, I usually think it means to whiten. But I learned from Julia Child that in the case of vegetables, it means to briefly boil them and then shock them one way or another so that they don't continue cooking from their own heat. And that's in preparation for another preparation. Now, I don't know where Franny got it that it's mostly Italian, because it's not mostly Italian. I mean, I don't really know many Italians who spend time to blanch anything. It's like my grandmother's cooking was not unlike Southern Italian cooking in the sense that no broth. You rarely started out anything with broth. My grandmother would put some chicken in the soup or whatever it was, or a piece of flanken for flavor. And Italians do similar things. They don't make broth first. In any case, this is something I think of as French, blanching, because I learned it from Julia Child. And in the case of Julia, it was string beans. I distinctly remember this. And also, later in life, I mean, Julia was the early 60s, but later in life, I actually knew Julia, and she used to blame herself for introducing undercooked vegetables to America, because until Julia, everybody was overcooking vegetables, or at least cooking them until tender, let's put it that way. But Julia blanched her string beans, meaning she brought a big pot of water to the boil, took her cleaned-up string beans, we'll get to that in a minute, and put them in the boiling water and literally boiled for 1 minute. It was a lot of water to bring to a boil for only cooking something 1 minute. Gotta say, that's a rich person's technique, because only a rich person could afford the fuel it takes to bring a big pot of water to the boil to boil something for only 1 minute. So it's not something that mostly poor Italians would do, even at court. I actually read some old aristocratic recipes, and there was no blanching going on. So I always think of it as something French. And the fact is, when Julia blanched her string beans and then shocked them, either by plunging them into a bowl of ice water, or I think just running them under cold water is sufficient to stop the cooking. She then cooked them further. And blanching is a way to prepare a vegetable ahead of time so that you don't have to cook it from start to finish when you're ready to eat it. So if for instance, I decide to do this, I would blanch my string beans and in a separate pan, saute some garlic or even onion in olive oil or butter, whichever you like, and maybe just flavor the oil with a piece of garlic. And then at the last minute, you can toss your beans over relatively high heat in that butter or oil, and they cook a little further, and they taste very good. Salt and pepper, of course, are always called for. So that's one of the few times I would ever blanch a vegetable. Franny asked me in particular about a dish that I actually made before she even sent me this letter, and that is Roman beans. They're the flat green beans. In Rome, they don't call them Roman, of course. They call them either fagiolini corallo or caroline. I hear caroline more than anything else, but if you want to look it up somewhere, fagiolini, which means string beans, basically, corallo, nobody seems to know where the word corallo comes from, or coralline. I always think of them as little corals, little beads, but they're not little at all. They're large, they're flat, and they're wide. I would say most of them are at least an inch wide. Now, I bought some at the farmer's market where I don't really like shopping anymore. I must tell you, I haven't been in a long time, and the prices really shocked me. $5 for a bunch of parsley, not even as big as the expensive grocery around the corner, which is charging $3.99, but a big bunch of parsley. Anyway, these beans were $5 a pound, and I needed 1 pound, so it's a splurge, but, you know, $5, a $5 splurge. So I love these beans, and so I went to the green market, which is the only place I know that I would get them, and I did get them there. And I must say they did not have a huge quantity either. I was there, it was before noon, so either they went really fast in the morning or they didn't have many to begin with, and I think it's that they didn't have many to begin with because, truth tell, these were not the best. I bought them. I knew that they were, I thought, a little small, a little too pale green, but I bought them anyway. And they were, in fact, not the best flat beans. So I've decided that from now on I'm going to make this with, because I like the dish, cooked with onion and tomato. Could be garlic, but I happen to like it with onion. And tomato is very, very traditional, classic Roman dish of these beans braised or stewed in tomato. So I did find one recipe somewhere that actually called for blanching the string beans, but that was only, the recipe said, if you thought that they might be tough. Well, mine were tough. And instead of cooking in tomato sauce, I'll give you the whole recipe in a minute, for a half an hour or so, it was more like 45 minutes, maybe even closer to an hour, before these beans got tender enough to my taste. And I like them very tender. They're very meaty. And anyway, here's what you do. So you can do this with regular string beans, but you have to realize that regular string beans, even tough old regular string beans, green beans as they now like to call them, because they don't have much string, they cook much faster. So you have to be conscious of that. So you start off with your onion. I sliced up what I would call a medium onion, 5-6 ounce onion, and sauteed it in at least 3 tablespoons of olive oil, and over medium heat until the onion was quite tender, but not browned. And then I added my string beans, which I like to both head and tail them, whether they're the normal string bean or the Roman bean. The Roman beans always have a stem on them, and you got to break that off. And then it always has a tiny tail, and I like to tip that off as well. If they're big ones, meaning more than, well, mine weren't big at all, but I cut them in half, more or less, some in thirds. But sometimes these beans are like 6 inches long, so you want to cut each one into thirds. I have cooked them whole and then decided that they needed to be cut up to eat. So I think you should start off by cutting them up. Not into small pieces, but 2 or 3 inch lengths. A pound of beans, 1 medium onion, several tablespoons of olive oil. Put the beans in the pot, a big pinch of salt, and toss the beans around in the hot oil with the onion until they start turning a darker green, a cooked color green. Mine actually did not want to do this, which was telling. but normally they do. They start. You don't have to get them all this darker color green, but at least get them started and make sure that they're all coated nicely with the oil from the onion. And then add tomato product. Now, I used about a half of a bottle of imported Italian tomato puree, passata. That means puree, tomato puree. There are a lot of products in the supermarket. The one that I buy is Muti, M-U-T-I, but there are other several. If they comes in a bottle as opposed to a can, you're probably better off. However, I have used Palmi with great success. Palmi comes in a cardboard container, and it's a very sweet tomato puree. You pour in enough tomato puree to barely cover the beans. If you want to use a canned tomato, a large can of tomatoes, I don't say a small can, which is 14, 15 ounces, because they're impossible to find these days. But the 28-ounce can is a double can, so to speak. Half of that can with half the puree. Crush up the tomatoes. I prefer crushing up plum tomatoes than buying crushed tomato. But if you have a crushed tomato product that you like, that's good, too. I think Palmi makes a good crushed tomato. And you want to just, as I say, barely cover the string beans. Then partially cover, depending. I would say partially cover the pot, meaning leave a little, make it a jar, so to speak, and let it simmer fairly gently. It's going to take, if my beans, as I said, took nearly an hour, but usually they only take a half an hour to 40 minutes. And you may have to add water. Nothing wrong with that. In the end, you can always uncover the pot and let the sauce reduce. But in the end, what you want is a really thick tomato sauce with all these beans. And I have to say, it calls out for a piece of bread to mop up the extra sauce. We ate it with pork chops as a side dish to pork chops. And by the way, beans cooked like this, whether they be the Roman beans, which are very meaty, so they're great. Vegetarians love them. or regular string beans, one or the other. This can be eaten either hot or at room temperature. I wouldn't need it cold necessarily, but room temperature is very good. And it's also better, I have to say, the second day. Cook them, let them cool down enough to put them in the refrigerator overnight, and the next day you can either just let them come to room temperature or heat them slightly just to warm them through. They really are delicious. And unblanched.
Unblanched.
Now, yeah, Franny mentions that, I don't know where she found this, a recipe for spinach that called for blanching spinach. I've never even thought about blanching spinach. The whole point of pre-cooking spinach is that to get rid of some of that liquid. So I wash my spinach very, very well, usually three changes of water. This is for spinach that, you know, came from a farm and might have sand in it. And then after it's clear water, I bring the same pot that I used to wash them and soak them, I use to cook them. So I put all this washed spinach in a colander, and I bring the big pot of onto a high flame with all the spinach drained, of course, in it. And with my long-handled tongs, I flip the spinach around, and really within a couple of minutes, it starts wilting. And when it's all wilted, turn off the heat and let it cool down a bit. And now you can drain your spinach either, depending on what you're going to do with it. If you're just going to sauté it, all you need to do is lift it out of the pot and throw away all that mucky-looking water. It's very, very metallic tasting. And that's a reason for doing this. Is, you know, spinach is full of iron, but it really tastes like it if you let it. So there's not blanched, but pre-cooked. And then I'd put it in a skillet with garlic and hot pepper and olive oil and cook it a second time like that. Then this broccoli rabe. Now, I love broccoli rabe, but I like bitter flavors. There are people like Bob Harned, who cannot tolerate bitter, and I mean really not tolerate, really get nauseated by bitter. He's not that bad, but I have learned that if I blanch my broccoli rabe for 5 minutes, long time, it has significantly less bitterness, but still be somewhat bitter, delicious. And so I bring a large pot. I have the same pot for all of this. It's a, I don't know, must be a, at least 40-year-old Farberware.
Is it a Paul Revere?
Farberware.
Yeah.
The big Farberware.
We had that pot. I know that pot.
Yes, I have it. It has a very heavy aluminum bottom, which is what makes it a good pot. But it's merely my boiling pot, so it doesn't matter. But anyway, bring that pot of water to the boil, large pot, and clean up your broccoli rabe. Now, what do I mean by that? If I'm really being particular, I will peel the thick stems and cook them. If I'm, you know, lazy, then I chop off the thick stems, and we don't eat them. They are fibrous, so you do need to peel them if you want them to be pleasant to eat. And anyway, as soon as the water comes to a boil with a nice spoonful of salt, I plunge in the broccoli rabe, and you want enough water there so it comes back to the boil fairly quick. But when it comes back to the boil, count 5 minutes, and then drain it. And now it's ready for oil, garlic, hot pepper, which is what everybody loves about broccoli rabe. Let me say, I first ate broccoli rabe in my Uncle Caesar's kitchen. Caesar was a wonderful cook, and he cooked broccoli rabe all the time, but he didn't blanch it at all. I'm sure he liked the bitter. Never talked about that, actually. But he would bring, he would wash the broccoli rabe, not dry it, just leave it with all the water clinging to it, and put it in a skillet with olive oil and garlic, hot pepper, not that much, and then saute the garlic. I mean, actually, he would put the broccoli rabe in, still with its water clinging to it, cover the pan, and when the broccoli rabe started wilting and started to cook, only then did he take off the cover and finish cooking it. It came out very tender, and I have to laugh, because this was a joke in the, quote, family, is that when his doctor told him he should avoid salt, instead of putting salt in the broccoli rabe, he started sprinkling in bouillon powder. So we said to him, Caesar, this is the number one ingredient in this bouillon powder is salt. He said, but the doctor never told me I couldn't use bouillon powder. He just said I can't have salt. Now, of course, Caesar was a very smart man, and he knew exactly what the doctor meant. He just didn't want to follow the advice, or he thought he was getting around it with that. I don't know. He just didn't want to follow the advice. But anyway, that is a case where I do blanch. I do blanch broccoli rabe when I do make it. Other leafy greens sometimes need some blanching or long cooking. I just think long cooking. For instance, kale. I don't like raw kale. I'm not sure where that all came from. I think the impression was that you were being healthy by eating raw kale. You were just as healthy, maybe healthier, by eating cooked kale. And kale takes a while to cook. So if you want to have it super simple, I would blanch it for 5 minutes and then dress it in a pan. Again, me, oil, and garlic and hot pepper. It doesn't have to be that. Bacon fat would be terrific. If you cook bacon and save a few tablespoons of your bacon grease, I hate calling it grease, but it is, kale, among other greens, is very
chard.
Good.
Swiss chard. Chicken.
Kale, collards. I love collards. This must be collard season. I don't really track that one. But at the green market this past weekend, it was like piles and piles of collards. And I'm tempted to buy collards. Now, that's something I don't blanch. But there are cases where I could see blanching those tough greens before you cook them in some secondary way. or some way to add flavor to them. In the case of the real tough greens, like collards, I mean, they just do cook
just
for a
cook
long
them.
Time.
Boil them.
And boil with ham hock.
Yes.
And then you get good, what do you call it? Pot liquor. Pot liquor. Yeah.
I actually have to interject that I had a 10-minute fight with whatever Google's chat bot is. Whatever Google's AI is trying to get a particular recipe. And it was hilarious to me because the one particular recipe that I am thinking about does not have any sugar in it. And it kept coming back. Four teaspoons of sugar. I'm like, no. But it is a lesson, because the lesson is, if you know what you want, or if you have the recipe on your left, which I happen to do in a book, that's one thing. But if you are just relying on Google or AI without that base of information, you are literally on your own. It's like the very beginning of those maps, Wave or whatever, where you followed what they said, but you didn't end up where you thought you were going to end up.
Uh-huh.
So I was really struck by that, because I know a lot of people who, it's just like, hey, no, you don't need a cookbook. It's just, let me just cook this one thing.
I must tell you, it's hard to make an argument for cookbooks these days when nearly everything is online somewhere or other.
That's why I was looking for this particular recipe, Arthur. You know that.
Speaking of cookbook, some neighbors knew that I was in the market for. He's Greek. Let me just add, the gentleman is Greek, and he knew I was in the market for Gigantes, which is the big Greek bean. It looks like a giant lima bean. They're very creamy. I love them. And so he brought me some. He happened to be in Astoria the next day, and he deposited a bag of beans at my doorstep. So now I have to make them. I want to make them. But the fact is, it's too hot right now. I need a day where I can keep the oven on for 2 or 3 hours. First, they have to be, speaking of blanching, they have to be soaked, boiled, and then baked. So I'm looking up recipes in my Greek cookbooks to find, even though this is an iconic dish, that there are no recipes for gigantes plaki, which is baked gigantes. And the reason I decided is that two of my best Greek food writers don't have recipes in their first seminal books is because they weren't available then. You couldn't, 30 years ago, you couldn't get these beans in the U.S. You would have had to, these are uncompromising food writers, by the way. I would say one of them who's still writing and is actually online and actually has a recipe for them on her website, I suppose it is. But I had a laugh. It's so of the moment. This is a recipe that I don't think originally had any sweetener, that contained honey. Honey is everywhere, honey. The other day I went to a pizzeria, a new pizzeria in Brooklyn. It's an adjunct to Frankie's Spuntino on Court Street. Many people will know about Frankie's Spuntino. Anyway, the pizza, I got this pizza that looked like it was going to be spicy pizza with some hot pepper on it. And when I sat down to eat it, I didn't stand there and wait for it. Young lady that we were with waited for the pizza. I didn't know that they put honey on it at the end. So what's that about? That's about pleasing a 20-something, maybe even 30-something clientele who wants sweet in almost everything, even on their pizza.
No comments.
I know.
My mother is.
Anyway, everybody, don't blanch. 99% of the time, it's not necessary.
But with with spinach, it is if you don't want that metallic taste. And I used to do that, I learned that the hard way, because I used to just, when I threw naked spinach, clean, but naked, no water, into saute, you don't get the same thing. So spinach, you have to, whatever you call it, do something to first. What I was wondering, though, is if you are cooking, if you are broiling, essentially, broccoli or asparagus or anything like that, I would not blanch.
I don't blanch asparagus. I do boil them. I do bake them. And broccoli, I only cook steamed. Got to say. And by the way, even if I'm going to cook it further, I steam it first.
Okay.
So anyway, it's not blanching.
No, steaming is not blanching. I get it. Okay. Arthur, it's always a pleasure to interact with the Mensch.
Me.
This has been Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch. Have a great week on Robin Hood Radio.